So thank you, and thank you for the introduction. Let me thank also the organizers for putting together this great workshop. Santa Barbara is an amazing place to do and to discuss about science, and this conference is no exception. What I would like to do today is that I'm going to discuss some of the recent and a little bit less recent results that we've been obtaining using machine learning and specifically what I call neural network states to study quantum systems, and more recently, and related to this conference, open quantum systems. So much of this talk is going to be dealing with machine learning. Neural networks are an integral part of machine learning, as you know. To the purposes of this talk, I will just need maybe one slide to explain what machine learning is, or what I need of machine learning during this talk. Specifically, for the rest of this talk, you can think of machine learning as a set of extremely somehow accurate and efficient techniques, numerical techniques, to approximate high-dimensional functions. So typically, this is done through inference or pattern matching. But to the purpose of this talk, think of this, especially about neural networks, as a set of ideas and techniques to approximate high-dimensional functions. So just to give you an example, what are these high-dimensional functions? Imagine that you have the problem of translating from a language to another language. So let's say what happens in Google Translate. Then the high-dimensional function that you want to approximate in that case is a function that takes as an input a string in a language, say in English, and outputs the same string translated in another language, say in Japanese. But the same is true for many other applications where machine learning is being used, and all of those can be recast in terms of finding high-dimensional functions. For example, speech recognition, you have some waveform, and you want to translate this into some speech. All of these applications can be recast in this form, and in the past 10 years or so, so starting from the beginning of 2010, we've really witnessed a lot of progress, an amazing amount of progress in the use of deep learning techniques to solve some of the problems that I've shown you before. And starting from 2012, where deep learning techniques started to beat basically all other image classification methods, up to today, where we are at the point where Google has managed to devise deep learning strategies that are able to beat humans, extremely complicated human strategy games, where that have been traditionally very hard for artificial intelligence. So we are really in the golden age of deep learning, and these kind of ideas have been also used. They are being used more and more in the context of physics, in our fundamental science, if you want. Two months ago, we had here at KTP, we organized a conference where we discussed some of this progress. And you can see, for example, in this review that we recently wrote, how these ideas from machine learning are permeating a lot of the domains of physics, ranging from particle physics to astrophysics, and of course, quantum physics, which is what I would like to talk about today. So what is the problems that we would like to address using this set of proven and powerful techniques that people are using more in the industrial applications? Well, the main problem that we have, as you know, as theoreticians, at least to discuss, to study quantum systems, is the many-body quantum problem, right? So specifically, the quantum many-body problem is the fact that if you want to describe the state of, let's say, n interacting particles, where this n is large enough and typically of the order of the Avogadro number, ideally, then the state of this object, the wave function or the density matrix, if you have an open system, is basically a huge monster, which is exponentially large, right? So this is at the heart of the many-body problem. And you know that as a consequence of this exponential complexity of the many-body wave function or of the density matrix, that classical simulation of, let's say, finding the ground state of some Hamiltonian or solving the time-dependent Schrödinger equation, or in this case, solving, for example, for the Lindblad time evolution, all those are exponentially hard problems on a classical computer, right? But something which is not always often well appreciated is that because of this exponential complexity, there are also problems intrinsically related with experiments. So, for example, if you want to characterize some quantum hardware performing, let's say, quantum state tomography, because of this exponential complexity, you are soon in trouble if you use techniques that rely directly on the wave function and on the, all the exponential complexity of the wave function. So, in this sense, this exponential complexity affects not only the theory, but also, for example, some cases where we want to characterize quantum hardware. Now, because of this, exponentially scaling problem, as you know, we have a set of problems that I put here in this terra incognita, this uncharted territory, that cannot be solved exactly unless we do some specific approximation. And specifically, the two main techniques I would say that we have to solve strongly correlated systems with controllable approximations, tensor networks and quantum Monte Carlo, both suffer from some limitations. So as you know, tensor networks are limited, so to speak, by the so-called, let's say, entanglement problem. So that, and specifically in two dimensions, they suffer from some limitations. Quantum Monte Carlo suffers from the same problem, so we cannot, for example, study exactly two-dimensional fermions and especially dynamics of open or closed systems. But on the other hand, from the point of view of characterizing hardware, because of this exponential complexity, as I was mentioning before, for example, if you want to perform a full tomography, we know that there is some exponential scaling that strictly limits us to characterize hardware of relatively small systems. And on the other hand, if we want to characterize, for example, how complicated are the quantum circuits that we can simulate classically, typically, if we just rely on techniques such as tensor contractions, we have an exponential scaling that does not allow us to go very far in this direction. So all of those are problems related to the exponential complexity of the wave function. And the idea that we put forward a couple of years ago with Matthias Troyer at ETH is to represent this high-dimensional function, so in this case, the wave function, but I will then show you how to generalize this to the density matrix, to represent this high-dimensional function, this wave function, in terms of an artificial neural network. So what I call neural network states is basically a parameterization of the many-body state, if you want, of the many-body amplitudes for a set of quantum spins, for a set of quantum numbers, for example, spin 1/2 quantum numbers, as in this case, which is written as a cascade of filters. So these are these Ws that are basically just parameters in this parameterization. Applied on the input state, which are these quantum numbers, and those filters are interleaved with a nonlinear activation function that I call here G, in a sequential fashion until we reach the final layer, which is the output in this case of the neural network, and which is associated with the value of the many-body amplitudes of the wave function. So you can think of this as a smart way of parameterizing, if you want, your high-dimensional state using a set of weights or filters, as they are called in the jargon of neural networks, that have been proven for a lot of applications to be extremely effective at solving the problems that I was telling you about before. So we want to use this kind of representation to solve quantum physics, and one of the things that have been emerged after we introduced these representations is that if you consider a deep network representation of the many-body state, you can, for example, immediately show that the amount of entanglement that you can encode in these representations is not typically limited by a volume low scaling, by an area low scaling, but you can efficiently encode volume low in this kind of states, for example, increasing the depth of the network in a polynomial way. So basically, the claim is that with using a polynomially large number of parameters, you can encode efficiently a volume low in this state. Specifically, deep convolutional neural networks have shown it has been shown that they can encode this entanglement rather efficiently. Now, once we have this representation for the many-body states, we have basically two main applications that we can do. On the lines of what I was introducing at the beginning. So one is about simulating quantum systems, and the other one is about characterizing, if you want, quantum hardware. So one is driven by a problem. So say you want to solve some Limbladian, or you want to solve some Schrödinger equation, and the other one is driven instead by experiments, where we are given some experimental measurements and we want to characterize the hardware itself. So let's start maybe with the first family of applications, which is somehow maybe closer to the intuition of, uh, of, uh, of the community. And here, what we want to do basically is that we have a parameterization of the wave function or of our density matrix, which is given by this neural network form. And we want to solve variationally for the ground state of a given Hamiltonian, or we want to solve variationally using a time-dependent variational principle for the dynamics of this state. And as I will show you in the following, we can also solve for dissipative dynamics using a parameterization of the density matrix. But in all these cases, what we do is that we want to rewrite these problems in a variational formulation in a way that we can reformulate them as an optimization problem for which we can then use all the techniques that we have from standard machine learning. Now, let me give you a specific example of the kind of applications that we've been done. One of the main models on which we have concentrated our efforts on in the past year or so is a prototypical model for frustrated spins in two dimensions, the J1, J2 model on a square lattice. So this is an Heisenberg interaction on nearest neighbors plus some J2 interaction, exchange interaction on the next two nearest neighbors. So this model cannot be solved exactly with any technique in two dimensions, especially on a square lattice. And there is an open question whether this model features a spin-liquid phase, so basically a disordered phase in between the limit where J1 is dominating and where you have some antiferromagnetic order, and the limit where J2 is much larger than J1 and you have a striped order. So the open question since at least 20 years is whether in between these two extremes there is a spin-liquid phase. Now, what we've done recently is that we've used one of these convolutional neural network architectures that are somehow the state of the art in image recognition and application of machine learning to some of the problems that I discussed before. We use a relatively shallow network of only a few layers. And this is to show you somehow the progress that we've been doing in the past couple of years. So starting from 2016, we've started to use these approaches to study, for example, the limit in which the J2 coupling is equal to zero. And already in the first paper, we saw that using relatively shallow networks, so this was the case where we only had one hidden layer, so basically just this was a really shallow network, not at all a deep network as the ones that people typically use, we could achieve, this is the error on the ground state energy, we could achieve some relatively good error on the ground state energy upon increasing the size of the network. So this alpha is basically the size, how many parameters we have, proportional to the number of parameters that we have in the network. And we could already achieve or slightly improve some of the existing variational approaches, including PEPs or entangled plugged states. More recently, using somehow a mildly deep neural network, we have been able to improve further upon these results. And even more recently, an actual deep network with some 20 layers, we've been able to achieve some 10 to the minus 5 accuracy, where basically this problem is solved exactly. So there has been some progress in the last 2 years, and this progress has been towards the direction of putting more and more layers in these networks and using these layers more efficiently to solve our favorite quantum problems. Now, coming back to this J1, J2 problem, where J2 is finite, here this is somehow our one of the most stringent benchmarks we are dealing with, and where we are also fighting, in a sense, against the delimitation of these techniques. For example, here you can see as a function of J2 the energy difference between our approach and other state-of-the-art techniques. So it's quite remarkable that in two dimensions, the best results that you can obtain on this model are obtained from the MRG, which is a one-dimensional technique. But this is the case. What we've done in this work is that we compared our results with the other approaches, and you can see that in most all of the phase diagram, but for this region, we have somehow new state-of-the-art results on this J1, J2 model, which again is a very challenging model on which people have studied for the past 20 years. And there is a lot of progress to be done already, however, still in this direction, in this intermediate region, but somehow we see this problem as our challenge for the next year or so, and I'm pretty optimistic that using the new advances that we have, we can also improve for the rest of the phase diagram. Now, coming to the other family of problems that, that I was discussing at the beginning. So as I was mentioning, because of the complexity of the wave function, also characterizing the quantum hardware by itself is an exponentially scaling problem. So in particular, you know that the problem of performing quantum state tomography is intrinsically exponentially scaling if you perform it with standard techniques. So the problem, as you know, is that you are given some simple measurements of your favorite quantum system, say a quantum computer or a quantum microscope images in this case, and you know that these images are distributed according to the square modulus of the wave function. And the goal that you want to achieve here is to reconstruct the wave function using these simple measurements of the wave function in some given measurement that I call some given measurement basis that I call here B, right? So you have a collection of measurements in a separate basis, and you want to reconstruct from those measurements both the amplitude and the phase, if you want, of the wave function. So this is the main goal of quantum state tomography. So in this setting, I'm talking about a pure state, but this can be done, of course, also for open systems. Now, what we've shown in this paper is that using basically parameterization of the wave function in terms of neural network, it is possible to recast this problem of quantum state tomography in terms of an unsupervised learning problem, where basically what we do is that we find we want to find the best parameters W in our neural network, such that basically in all the given bases that I have access to in the experiment, I want to match this probability distribution that I'm parameterizing with these weights with what I can have access to in the experiment, right? And to do that, what we do is that we minimize a quantity which is typically very well known in the neural network literature, which is the Kullback-Leibler divergence. So this is basically a distance in probability space between our reconstructed probabilities, this psi b square, and the PB that I'm trying to reconstruct from the experiment. And this can be, the derivatives of this object can be efficiently computed using only the samples from the experiment. So just to give you an idea why we want to do all of that, well, basically, if you do full state tomography, you are soon doomed to treat only very small systems. So basically, if you want to do tomography of 8 spins, 8 qubits, you need to do about 1 million measurements, which is not the most effective thing. If you think about that, especially if you want to try to characterize, as we want today, larger and larger hardware while we move towards larger quantum computers. So it's clear that we want to have a technique that will allow us to scale and to do much larger systems. And as we've shown in this paper for the W state, but also for more complicated systems, these techniques allow us to efficiently do this operation. For example, what I plot here is the number of measurements that you need to perform and as a function of the final overlap that we achieve using this tomographical approach. And you can see that you can easily go to 80 or 100 qubits using a number of measurements which is substantially smaller than what you needed on much smaller systems. So this kind of approach scales and can be extended also to other more complicated systems. And something that I think is particularly significant also for experimentalists is that with this approach, once we have reconstructed the wave function on a computer, we can use the wave function on a computer to measure some quantities that you were not able to measure in the first place in the experiment, right? So imagine that the only thing you can do is measure in some given basis, and from this given basis, we then perform this tomography to reconstruct the wave function. So then what we can do afterwards on our computer is basically to use our Monte Carlo techniques to measure quantities such as, I don't know, the entanglement entropy, most chiefly, that you cannot measure directly in the experiment. So this is a way to extend, to some extent, also the capabilities of the experiment you have at hand using elaboration of the wave function on a classical computer. Now, since this conference is about open quantum systems, it's important also to discuss the case where we don't have just pure wave function, but also density matrices. So this is a family of applications on which we've been working since maybe less than a year. So it's less developed with respect to the other cases that I was showing you at the beginning. But the main idea here, as you can imagine, is that instead of representing the wave function in terms of a neural network, we have here a representation of the density matrix in terms of an artificial neural network. So basically, we can separate our degrees of freedom of the Brian, the cat, if you want, of the density metrics into two different groups, left and right degrees of freedom, and we parameterize, as we did before, this object in terms of a deep network, right? So this is exactly what we did before for the wave function. There is, however, an important difference, and the difference is that here, while we can make these representations easily to be Hermitian, we cannot guarantee, in general, for a deep network, that this representation of the density function, of the density metrics, are positive semi-definite. So this is somehow one of the limitations that we have to face in this case. However, there is a trick that we can play that can be done explicitly for some shallow networks, where we can purify this, basically, some given representation, some pure state representation of given by a density, by a neural network, and have now a positive semi-definite representation of the density matrix. So what we do here is that we introduce a set of ancillary variables, and we represent these wave functions, if you want, in this extended space in terms of deep networks. And in some cases, this sum basically can be done explicitly, and this guarantees that you have a positive semi-definite and also Hermitian representation of the density matrix. So just to give you an example, this is the explicit form that that Giacomo Dallai and Roger Mecco introduced in 2018 for this density matrix. In the case where you only have one hidden layer, so this can be done analytically. And this is just to mention that we have an analytic and explicit form for the density matrix that we can use for our calculations, and especially to do, let's say, simulation and tomography. So in the case of tomography, this technique has been used to, for example, perform tomography of open systems. This is just one example where they did tomography for the Bell state, but this can be generalized also to much larger systems. Now, let's go to the heart of the problem, and the thing that we want to do here is that we would like to use these representations as much as we've done for the ground state, but we want to use them to solve or to find a good solution approximation of Lindblad-ian dynamics, right? So this is the one of the main interests of this conference. To start this kind of problem, I mean, we have to first have a variational formulation of what we want to solve, right? So the main thing that we want to solve is this time-dependent equation for the density matrix, the Lindblad equation. And what we do is that we use a variational formulation which is analogous to what has been done already with tensor networks. A time-dependent variational formulation in which basically you can think of that you have two sides. So at each instant of time, you have the exact time evolution, which is generated by the Lindblad-ian super operator rho that gives you the time derivative of your state rho. And on the other side of this slide, you have the variational time evolution. So the fact that these neural network weights have some finite time derivative, so that I call now the weights alpha for some historical reasons, then the fact that these parameters have a finite time derivative so that they can change as a function of time can induce also a dynamics inside the density matrix. So then what we do is that we basically minimize at each instant of time the distance in L2 norm between the exact time evolution and the approximate time evolution induced by the variational parameters. So in order to do so, we can perform this thing explicitly, and it can be shown that this solving the equations of motion can be done using stochastic techniques efficiently. And this kind of approach has been put forward not only by us, but also by three other groups at the same time, one in Paris, one in TPFL, and the other one in Tokyo. So the main application that we've done for this technique so far is to study basically a dissipative anisotropic Heisenberg model. So here the Hamiltonian of the system is basically an anisotropic exchange Heisenberg term plus some an external magnetic field coupled to the Z direction in this case. And then the dissipator that we have as this form, basically where you have a local dissipator killing or creating spins. First of all, I mean, we've done some benchmarks on a relatively small system. This is like four sites system. This is the case where we start with the system, we initialize the system basically in a fully polarized state. And you can see in this plot the magnetization along the Z direction as a function of time. Then we let it evolve under the action of the Liouvillian. And you can see that we can reproduce pretty accurately the exact dynamics that in this case you can obtain with exact diagonalization. So this is again the expectation values of the magnetization as a function of time. But we've done this approach also to some slightly larger chain. This is 16 spins, which is already slightly larger than the previous one. What I show here is basically the magnetization as a function of time minus what you expect from the stationary state at long times. So basically, we expect that this quantity goes to zero when the time is large enough in our optimization procedure. And you can see that also in this case, we achieve some good result on the stationary state magnetization. So these are still admittedly relatively small systems, and there's a lot to be done in terms of extending these applications to larger, more complicated systems. However, one step in this direction has already been done at APFL in Switzerland, where they've studied the same model, but in the absence of a magnetic field in two dimensions. In the vicinity of the dissipative phase transition, which happens in this unit around one, and studying a bit larger two-dimensional system, they've shown, or at least they have some indication that there is no second phase transition around this point, as it was predicted by mean field calculation, cluster mean field calculation. So at least this is some indication that with these techniques we can go beyond what we can do with other approaches based on, for example, mean field. Now, the last thing that I want to mention is that most of these techniques, not yet the open system ones, because are too recent, but most of the, for example, ground state techniques are implemented in our open source project, which is called NETCAT. If you are interested, you can have a look at this project and also at the different things that you can do, including tomography, for example, using this Python-based environment that we are developing at the Flatiron Institute in collaboration with a lot of other people. Okay, so this is my slide of open challenges, but first of all, I mean, I hope that I've convinced you that we have a new technique that we can use to study both open and closed systems and try to mitigate some of the limitations of other approaches and try to explore that part of the uncharted territory, especially in two dimensions, where we don't have really good approximations, for example, to study dynamics, especially of dissipative systems. But in general, one of the open challenges that I would like to point out, and somehow it's been discussed already yesterday to some extent, is that in general, I think it's very important, I mean, for us as a community to try to find different measure of classical simulation complexity that go beyond entanglement entropy. So as I was mentioning before, these neural network states, for example, are a class of states that are not limited by entanglement. So there is no intrinsic limitation due to the fact that we have a finite entanglement in the system. And this is in contrast, for example, with tensor network states that are actually limited by entanglement. So it's clear that there is a whole family of variational states, some of them being discovered already in the 50s of past century, like Jastrow states, that are not limited by entanglement. And as a community, I believe that it would be extremely interesting to find new measure, a meaningful measure, of classical simulation complexity that go beyond entanglement entropy. So, for example, if you think about the problem of simulating classical systems with these neural networks, this can be done exactly. It doesn't matter how much the entanglement of the classical system is. So it's clear that entanglement is completely irrelevant for this family of states. Now, the other thing that is more a wish list, if you want, for us is that we are still working on improving and scaling up these simulation techniques to study larger two-dimensional systems in the context of open dissipative quantum dynamics. But again, I'm relatively optimistic, and I believe that as much as we've done for the ground state problems, we will be able soon, hopefully, to address also open challenges like the Frassetti's problems in two dimensions for the closed systems. And again, I mean, the other wish list, if you want, is that I believe that it's important to start using also these techniques to benchmark actual experimental data. I'm willing to discuss also with experimentalists about this. Because indeed, there are many alternatives if you think about the problem of performing tomography on larger quantum hardware, especially in two dimensions. And these machine learning techniques are, in my opinion, one of the few ideas and one of the few techniques that you can use really to benchmark and to perform tomography of large quantum hardware. So it would be interesting also to discuss more about this with experimenters. So thank you.
So thank you very much, Giuseppe, for the nice talk. Yeah, I see a lot of questions. We have plenty of time.
So really fascinating talk. I'm wondering about this idea of tomographic reconstruction from incomplete information.
Yes.
And what exactly the assumptions are that go into that. Because it certainly seems like at some level, if I needed to make a measurement of a thing to reconstruct the whole wave function, there's no way you can tell me the value of that thing without me having made the measurement, right? And unless you've made some assumptions about the wave function in the first place.
Yeah, so what we do is that we have we parametrize the wave function with certain variational form. So in the,
why should I expect that my wave function fits well with your variational form? Is maybe the question.
Well, I mean, this is, if you want, I mean, this is the same thing. Why would you expect that, for example, a neural network fits well the problem of playing Go? This is an open question, if you want, in the literature of machine learning, that where nobody knows the answer to, to be honest.
But
in practice, we see that it works pretty efficiently. So.
But then it sounds like it depends upon the specific model that I'm studying, whether you're low dimensional.
Let me mention that. Yeah, this is a good point. So if you have a completely chaotic quantum state that is a random state in Hilbert space, there's no way you will be able to find a low dimensional parameterization of this state in terms of a neural network, for example, of any other classical state, because this is completely chaotic and random. But if your state has some structure, for example, is the ground state of a physical Hamiltonian or is the time evolved state from some physical evolution, then there is a high hopes that we can do that efficiently.
I guess I'm just wondering, to what extent do you have to optimize the structure of your neural network based upon already knowing something about the model you can reconstruct things within that model?
Not too much. I mean, the only thing you need to know is basically how many spins you have in this case, and then what you can do is that you can measure some surrogate of this quantity, and then when this quantity is at a minimum, if you are not satisfied, you can try to lower it down and then increase the capacity of the network, but this can be done systematically.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
So I had a question. So you motivated the J1, J2 model by showing this region in the middle where it wasn't clear, the spin liquid. So
yes.
Do you now know, using your methods, what's happening in the middle?
No, that's the problem. That's why I was saying we are still fighting in this case with our error. So in this intermediate region, we are competitive, but not yet the best technique. So if we do any claim now, people will say, but the MRG is more accurate. So the idea is that we want first to improve upon this data and then make substantial claim.
Can I ask another question?
We have some preliminary evidence, but we don't discuss it.
So it seems to me implicit in your methodology that you need to know the answer from another method.
Not at all. No. This is a variational energy. So what we are comparing here is the difference between my energy and some other method's energy. So, you know, in any variational technique, if my energy is lower than another method, then I'm more accurate than the other method.
Yeah,
but I don't need the wave function from the other method. I just need, you know, to compare the energies. So it's.
But maybe I'll ask.
Along this line, aside from actually the ground state, isn't it not necessarily known that having a lower energy corresponds to a stronger fidelity with the ground state? I thought in variational methods, this is kind of an assumption, but there are many systems where this is not necessarily true. That just because your wave function has a lower energy, that means it has a better overlap with the ground state?
Well, I mean, I would argue that this depends a lot. So if you have a gap, you can prove that the fidelity basically scales like the uncertainty on the ground state error, on the energy. So, what I argue is that if we have an accuracy of 10 to the minus 5, you can expect an uncertainty of other quantities, which roughly speaking is the square root of this, under some mild and more or less reasonable assumption, but I mean, we can discuss.
And as a second point, sorry, which is similar to the question just asked, is that like with tensor network methods, you kind of know what class of problems that you're able to target and find good solutions for because, you know, they satisfy the area law. Do you have any intuition as to exactly what kind of...
Well, if I want, I can also make this state satisfy area law. So the only thing I need to do is that I need to cut these filters to be completely local and do not have a long-range connection. But the point is that I can also make them to be volume low entangled. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is in general, an open question, and there is a lot of theory activity on understanding what kind of states we can represent efficiently and what we cannot. But again, I would argue that entanglement entropy is a relevant measure for tensor networks, especially in 1D. In 2D, I would argue that this is not even relevant for tensor networks, but I mean, this is another discussion maybe we can have later, but in any case.
I have a couple of questions. One is related to the fact that you told us that your method does not really reproduce positive density matrices, and then you need to use this purification
yes,
technique.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
My question is it does this limit the applicability of this method to a specific set of states or not? And the second question is whether you are also looking to applying this technique to non-Markovian dynamics.
Yes, so okay, those are great questions. So as I was mentioning before, we know how to do this purification analytically at the moment, only for a shallow network, so only with one ideal layer. So in this sense, this limits a little bit on the kind of system that we can study, because we have seen also from the ground state that we have to go deeper to get better results. But this is an open research problem. I believe that we'll find out something to improve this. The other question is about non-Markovian dynamics. This is, I have friends working, I never worked before this on open systems, and they told me you have to solve the Lindblad equation, and that's what I tried to do. But I mean, I've seen around here that this is maybe not the best thing to do in some cases. So we can discuss certainly about how to use these techniques to do other things. And I know that Lincoln has a strong opinion about that.
Thank you for leading into my question. So specifically, you used a phenomenological local Lindblad model. We sort of talked about this at the March meeting, so I don't know if you had time to think about it, but I'll pose the question in this public format, and you can let me know your thoughts, which may simply be, I don't know yet. So we know that to get thermalization of easing model, we need this correct first principles, global Lindblad model where the Lindblad operators address the global eigenstates. But we actually don't know if we really need all of those operators. We might need a smaller set. So machine learning may be able to show significant quantum advantage, overcome the quantum advantage argument for open systems. Mm. Have you thought about how you might work on that, the importance of which Lindblad operators you need to operate on the global eigenstates of the system? Is it clear, my question? Yeah.
This is a great point. So one of the things that we'd like to do is to extend these techniques to perform, to somehow learn also the Lindbladian from the data, if you want. I mean, I don't know if this goes in somehow in this direction, but you can try to understand to have your experimental data and see, okay, I want to learn what are the most relevant Lindbladian operators, and I can do that using some derivation, some derived version of this tomography. Yeah.
So could you do that on
certainly
your...
Certainly something that we want to do.
Right, but you could also try to do that on your closed quantum system simulations with a subsystem and see if you can learn, for example, time-dependent couplings in Lindblad operators or time-independent. I mean, in that sense, you could get to, sort of simpler ideas of non-Markovian dynamics. It seems like that's something that your methods can address, right?
That's a great point, yeah. I haven't thought about that, but yeah, we can discuss more.
Okay, well, there are people much more expert on this than me in this audience who haven't asked questions, so you can ask them. But I'll turn this back over to Adhikam.
A quick question about, actually, it's a question about a question that you asked about complexity metrics toward the end.
Yes.
I wonder, is there anything useful? I'm not an expert in machine learning, obviously, and I may be asking a dumb question that there's an easy reference that I should know about. But think about using your methods to try to simulate the output of a random quantum circuit, right? Mm-hmm. That's chaotic and all of the correlations are extremely high order and there are no low order correlations at all. And so you expect exponentially small gradients in any optimization search to try to reproduce that data.
Oh, that's for VQE ansatz, though, not strictly speaking for, I mean, okay, anyway.
What do you mean? Well,
I mean, this is Bar and plateaus, I guess you are referring to those.
Yeah.
But that's if you have a VQE and you have random parameters, right? It's not. But in any case, this, no, okay, maybe you finished, yeah, sorry.
I'm just wondering if, you know, because clearly you can represent entangled states, but if this is an entangled state that has significant low-order correlations to guide the system.
Sure. Now, this somehow falls back into the category I was discussing before of chaotic random state. So in that case, nobody expects like a classical parametrization to be effective because this is too entropic in a sense to be better specified, to be described by a classical machine. But you know, in a sense, this is also, but that state is also, you know, not so interesting, I would argue, to be discussed.
But my point is that I was asking if you think it might be worth fixating on the lowest order of correlations as some measure of complexity. It seems the higher order that the first non-trivial correlations are, the more difficult it is going to be for any kind of...
Yeah, definitely for some families of neural networks, you can use correlations and higher order correlations as a measure of what you can learn. Unfortunately, not for in general for deep networks, but this is certainly something that people can do, yeah.
So you didn't say very much about the machine learning part itself. So what kind of machine learning is this? Is this reinforcement learning or?
So the funny thing is that it's somehow in between a reinforcement and unsupervised learning. So basically, okay, so let's see. So the tomography part is basically unsupervised learning. So it's standard unsupervised learning. So you just do, you know, you have a chiral divergence, you have two terms in the gradient. One is obtained by sampling from your machine, and the other one is given by the data. The variational Monte Carlo, the variational part, is basically is slightly different because we have to, in order to compute the expectation value of the energy, we have we don't have a stationary, if you want, probability distribution. We have learning as much as for the experimental data. So the distribution that we want to learn is not stationary and depends on the parameters of the wave function in a self-consistent way. So at each step, we sample from psi square. Then we regenerate some samples with Monte Carlo chain, for example, to obtain expectation value of the energy, the gradient, and then we iterate. But we don't have external data in the sense that we sample from our best approximation of the wave function and we generate ourselves our data.
So this is really more about the representation of the state rather than really training a network that learns something and then does something afterwards.
Is closer to reinforcement learning, as you were saying, because in the reinforcement learning, you don't necessarily have external data. I mean, you just have the goal of beating, a guy at Go or chess. You have the games of the rule of the games, and you have to find out your own strategy to do that.
Yeah, but then it's still normally a probabilistic action that the machine learns, and you can still sample afterwards and still use this to improve your graph.
Yeah, so the thing that we miss, if you want, is this probabilistic step where we change the action of. So this is a bit easier than reinforcement learning, but it's a bit harder than unsupervised. So that's why I call it in between.
Okay, thanks.
So we just have 2 minutes left. So two brief questions, Susanna and then Karen.
Okay. Does it make sense to think about hybridizing methods? So for instance, instead of the neural network procedure starting blind from the beginning, using, let's say, inputs for another method that is very efficient in the transient and fails miserably with the asymptotics?
Yeah, we can do that. So for the ground state problems, people are doing that where they basically write the wave function as a product of some, let's say, the best mean field approximation or another approximation that you have times a neural network. So in this case, you already start from the best mean field approximation, and then you somehow substantially improve using this technique, but you start already from a good approximation. So I guess that something similar can be done also for the dynamics, as an initial condition, in a sense, for the neural network, yes.
Hi, so along the lines of this, these questions about non-Markovianity, I'm curious if you can, instead of dealing with master equation types of setting. Can you just characterize completely positive maps or a process? Would that be easier, harder?
Well, it's a bit harder. there's no doubt about that. But somehow it goes in the direction of performing, if you want, tomography, you know, like of the full process tomography, basically. And this is something that we are willing to do. To some extent, I don't know. Maybe there are some more to that.
Okay, I think we are over time now, but there will be a discussion session later. So let's thank Giuseppe and Ben again. And we reconvene at 10 June.